afternoon. This is the first meeting of the Select Committee. Can folks hear me? Great. This is also my first time chairing a Zoom meeting, so I'm going to rely heavily on staff assistance to make sure that everything goes right. And they should, Owen Wirth is operating as our committee administrator today. And Ellen Larson is operating as our committee legislative assistant today. So folks, feel free to pipe in if you see your speaker screwing up. The thing that brings us here together today is to listen to Minnesota nurses about the conditions that they're experiencing. We know that our nurses are on the front lines in this pandemic and being expected to care for the rest of us and in really a unique position to be managing the stress of this environment and functioning as a key critical part of our workforce right now. And so the major objective here is to listen and hear what is going on with our nurses and to find out what, if anything, we maybe want to consider in the way of a legislative response. And I'm so pleased that the president of the Minnesota Nurses Association, Mary Turner, has agreed to appear today. I know you need rest as much as anything else, but we are here to listen to Minnesota's nurses today. So I will let you lead us off. Thank you, Mary.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hortman and committee. As she said, my name is Mary Turner. I am the president of Minnesota Nurses Association, but more importantly, I am a night shift intensive care nurse at North Memorial in Robbinsdale and that hospital's very first COVID ICU. From the very beginning, and we probably got some of the first patients to our ICU in the state. And just as a side note, our ICU can take anywhere from 13 to 20% of the ICU COVID patients in the state of Minnesota, just at North Memorial alone. Every single one of our 13 beds are filled with intubated COVID patients, very sick patients. From the very moment that we started it, the very first weekend that we were taking care of them, I worked that weekend, and beginning of March, and we have been rationing and reusing our personal protective equipment. I can still remember the younger nurses that weekend being so appalled at the idea that they would have to reuse their N95 mask all shift, only to be told at the end of the shift, oh no, you will use this mask until it falls off your face. This is totally foreign to what we were taught in nursing school. And as you will hear other nurses say, this would have been something that would have gotten us disciplined in the past and potentially lose our license. To be practicing the way we are now supposed to be practicing with the PPE is totally unacceptable. And like I said, we could have lost our license. In the essence of transparency, I'm also on the governor's task force for this pandemic crisis stuff. And I watched CDC in a week's time walk back from optimal PPE standards down to the bare minimum. I kind of joke that I bet you anything by the end of the week, we'll all be wearing a piece of typing paper across our face. Well, it's almost gotten to that point. Just a little bit about what goes on my unit. Like I said, everyone is intubated. They are very sick. We have found out through the days and weeks that this not only affects the respiratory, but it affects the cardiac, the kidneys, and affects every portion of the body. So people are in these beds for no less than a month. Just when we think we can get them extubated and off our floor, they have to be reintubated again. And then when we think they're just fine, they go into cardiac arrest or kidney failure. That being said, it was very alarming when I found out we were going to be opening the hospitals up elective surgeries. And we were told in the committee that we had enough PPE, which I beg to differ. Rationing PPE and enough, in my mind, is a contradiction of terms. Because we're not allowed to be able, we don't have enough PPE to have it being used the proper way. And then to say that as far as having enough ICU beds, most of the hospitals have plans for creating other ICU beds, but we are approaching the surge point very fast. I know at our hospital, we have 3 out of our 4 ICUs are COVID, and we have 2 whole three med-surg floors that are all COVID. And we, of course, are the level 1 trauma. No one's going to take that responsibility away from us. We still will get all the trauma. How we're going to be able to do this safely, how we're going to be able to keep COVID patients away from surgical patients is, I would imagine, a logistical nightmare for our hospitals. You will hear from the nurses also, about from various healthcare companies, about how at one company they're doing something one way and another company they're doing it a different way. I would like to point out at this time that several months back, we made a repeated attempt to bring all the hospital systems to the table. This would have not only benefited the nurses and the M&A nurses, but it would have benefited the hospitals to have a vehicle of ability to see what everyone else is doing so that we could all have the same standards. But they chose not to do that. That's not to say that each of our hospitals hasn't been able to communicate with our, you know, like our chairs have, some of them have been able to talk to their nurse leaders. But we had offered many times for months to come to the table as one. A little bit about how fast we're going through the PPE, because this word enough PPE really has me concerned. I'll give you one example of just how fast PPE is used. When a person goes into respiratory distress, they need to be turned on their stomach. They're intubated, they're turned on their stomach to be able to breathe better. It takes 7 people in that room, 7 gowns, 7 gloves, 7 masks, 7 shields for one moment in time to turn that person over. That's just an example I'd give of just how fast we go through it, okay? I realize we have had supply chain issues, and we've heard all different excuses. So our employers have said that they're on their 5th attempt to get PPE to the hospital. We're hoping that these supply line issues have been solved. The reality is, and especially as we start to open up, there isn't right now enough PPE for everyone. And we need to do something about that. On our national level, we have pushed for the Defense Production Act so that just like in World War II, when we had everyone making tanks and planes, et cetera, our PPE is our armor. And it's not going to just be the healthcare workers at the bedside that are going to need it. Everyone is going to need some form of PPE, and we need to have everyone or as many facilities or manufacturing doing this as possibly can. The last thing I'd like to say is that all of our nurses, myself included, a lot of us, have taken care of our own fellow nurses who have come down with the COVID. We have had we've had close to 1,500 people, just healthcare workers, nurses that have come down with COVID in Minnesota alone. We've had over 1,000 over the nation that have died from COVID. I myself spent a weekend caring for a fellow nurse at my hospital that was fighting for their lives on a vent, praying every moment that I took care of this person that they would make it out alive. Thank God they did. But I'm telling you, I dread the day that as a labor leader, as a nurse leader, and as a fellow bedside care nurse, I dread the day that I have to stand in front of the media to report out the first death of a Minnesota nurse because they weren't properly protected at the bedside. That will be a day that wakes me up in nightmares. And now I'm going to pass it off to the rest of the nurses who will better explain just what we are dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you. If the next person from the nurses can say their name, is that Tanya, full name and where you work, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tanya Moss. I work at Sanford Health. I have worked there for 29 years, and I am a union representative for the nurses on a medical surgical floor. Since COVID-19 preparations have started, there have been many questions from staff on how COVID-19 will impact patient care. Simple things, like being in full PPE and carrying a tray out of a room, requiring two hands, is so difficult to accommodate. You have to be mindful of everything you touch, where you put your hands. You have to be mindful not to contaminate other things or yourself while you are taking off your PPE. It is dangerous to remove PPE because you can't see the virus, and people need training and other staff occasionally watching them to make sure they do it correctly all of the time. Leadership has incorrectly told staff that they should use the same precautions as they would with a tuberculosis patient. This is inaccurate, as you do not need to wear a gown or gloves or an eye shield with a tuberculosis patient, and you cannot transmit it by touching something. Nurses want to use the best practices, which used to be in place before the CDC watered down their PPE usage guidelines. Where I work, we are given a mask, and we were given a surgical mask and asked to place it in a bag every day. We use the same bag over and over. And now they have changed it to use one surgical mask per day. However, the N95 masks, they're being placed in a bag. So the outside of the mask is dirty because you're going into patients' rooms, and the inside of the mask is your germs. And when you place that in a bag, the bag becomes contaminated. So we are using that mask over and over again. There is no break, like for 5 days, we use it the next day. Healthcare staff are not dying in China currently, as they have appropriate and adequate PPE. Why is our country placing our healthcare staff at risk? In the United States, more than 1,000 doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals have died treating patients with COVID-19. This is not acceptable, and we do know that this is coming to Minnesota. COVID-19 is like radiation. The larger amount of the virus that a person is exposed to makes them sicker, leading to high rates of healthcare illness in staff. How many healthcare staff deaths are too many? Incident Command at Sanford Health has stated that there is adequate PPE and that there is not a shortage. However, we would normally throw a mask and a gown away after each occurrence in a patient's room. I work on a medical surgical floor, which is the highest risk floor for healthcare staff to be infected with COVID-19. As a nurse, my right to have adequate and appropriate PPE, the way it is intended to be used, is not occurring, and that puts my life and the lives of my coworkers at risk. Staffing has been a problem at Sanford since before the COVID-19 pandemic. Sanford has had to hire many travel nurses, with low census being because of non-essential procedures being on hold. They are having travel nurses work and making contract nurses stay home. Staff are angry that they are not being allowed to work, which is a violation of their contract. Personally, I have had to ask leadership for many basic things that I need to do my job safely. Some, but not all, of those things have been accommodated. When asking about alternative housing, leadership asked me to call a specific hotel if staff wanted to quarantine while caring for COVID-19 patients. The room was $95 plus tax, which is cost prohibitive over a long period of time. It's $4,000 a month. I sent an email to Bemidji State University to ask if they had dorm rooms available for nurses or doctors who needed quarantine. Other nurses contacted campgrounds. Sanford placed me on administrative leave for reaching out to BSU, as they said I was misappropriating funds. Nowhere in my email did I discuss who would pay for the rooms. I assumed it would be self-pay. BSU never responded to my email. Instead, they contacted my employer. Sanford placed me on a leave on 4/14/20 for an investigation. I have a 47-day leave currently without any notice of when I will come back. My employer is angry when people come to union stewards with questions. Leadership tells nurses they should not be talking to union stewards. Nurses do not want to speak with management, as they fear consequences of doing so. Sanford does not want me to work because they do not want any union involvement. Although we have had no COVID-19 patients, they have not worked with the union to identify how to furlough staff or any other contract issue. Nurses realize that it is not easy to accommodate all that is needed to have adequate preparations made. However, nurses know what nurses do, and they need to have a say in how their work will be affected. With Ebola and other pandemic training, frontline staff, including nurses, have been involved in the planning process. This is not taking place now during the COVID-19 pandemic. Last year, my boss told me, "You make us all better because I always advocate for patients and staff. Now I'm in trouble because they do not want me to advocate for patients or staff. People matter. People's lives matter. And corporate healthcare needs to be held accountable. All nurses in Minnesota should have the same access to adequate and appropriate PPE. Correct PPE guidelines need to be identified by the Minnesota Department of Health. Hospitals should not be able to dictate what appropriate PPE is based on the quantities they do or do not have. Sanford says it has enough PPE. However, we are not using it as it is intended to be used. President Trump, governors, and hospitals are all saying there's enough PPE. The community believes this, and they also tell me there's enough. We need transparency and truthfulness and not gaslighting. If there isn't enough, then admit there isn't enough and get us what we need. Please help to keep us safe."
Thank you. And I do see a question in the chat. What I'd like to do is go through and hear from all of the nurses, and then we'll loop back through for questions unless anybody has to drop off early. And then let us know if that's the case, and we'll make sure to get that question to that person right away. Next, we have Erica Helling.
Hi. My name is Erica Helling. I'm a registered nurse at M Health Fairview Southdale. I've been in nursing for 23 years, starting on a med-surg unit that regularly managed the care of infectious disease patients who presented with tuberculosis symptoms and other infectious diseases that required strict isolation policies to prevent the spread of infection to healthcare workers and other patients. At my career start, we used reusable gowns one time and laundered them for each use. Additionally, we'd use PAPRs, or a head covering that infuses filtered air toward the wearer, ensuring that the air available to the user was free of particles from the infected patient. The PAPR head covering was assigned to one nurse and used for the same patient until that patient discharged. These head coverings that are inches from your mouth and nose were never shared. Fast forward 23 years, and infectious disease practice standards evolved for the bedside worker until COVID-19. Until COVID-19, a bedside RN entering an infected patient room would wear a disposable gown, N95 mask, and gloves. If a patient required extended bedside work, as in ICU, where I work now, the RN might choose to wear the single-wearer PAPR hood, disposable gown, and gloves. PAPRs are more comfortable for extended use as they provide airflow and are not tight against the face. Since COVID-19, personal protective equipment standards are well below the very basics of infectious disease practice. The hospitals continue to tout the CDC guidelines for safe patient care. Before this pandemic, I might have been talked to about the sloppy use of reusing a gown or N95 mask because it was considered unsafe. The changes of PPE conservation since we've lowered our standards for safety include the reuse of N95 masks. Currently where I work, RNs place their first mask in a paper bag after a day's use, which is typically a 12-hour day where I work. 5 days later, that mask is available for another 12-hour shift for the RN. After the second use, the mask is discarded. Each RN is allowed to have 5 N95s in play at one time, allowing for 5 days between first and last use, as allegedly the virus is no longer viable once it's within a paper bag for 5 days. Reuse of reusable gowns involves one cloth gown per RN per one patient per 12-hour shift. This gown is stored within the patient's room, hanging off a peg, next to all other bedside providers' gowns, slightly touching, with the infected side of the gown folded inward. To put this in perspective, past practice dictated that each person would use a single-use disposable gown upon entry to the infected patient's room. Under no circumstances were we allowed to reuse that gown. In fact, nursing might be talked to should they choose to reuse a gown. To give further perspective, the nurse who was reusing a gown likely has at least one more patient in the ICU where I work, or on a med-surg unit as many as four. While that gown might have protected the nurse from the patient's infectious process the first time, can we be assured that the gown didn't cross-contaminate the nurse's scrubs after the second donning? We know that doffing or removing a PPE is the most likely time that an RN might contaminate their scrubs. Can we be assured that the nurse didn't contaminate as they crossed the hall and care for another patient who was not in isolation? This practice would never have passed any infectious disease standard pre-COVID-19. In order to conserve PPE, nurses are operating iPads at the bedside, so providers who are considered non-essential might perform a bedside visitor assessment. These encounters cannot happen without the bedside nurse. Nursing performs the assessment while the MD or provider observes and directs the assessing. In some units, nursing are doing the work of lab techs now, collecting the blood to conserve PPE. Another area of PPE conservation revolves around nursing cleaning all high-touch surfaces within the patient's room. Environmental services will no longer perform daily cleaning within an isolation room. Nursing will manage the daily cleans. Environmental services will enter the room on day 4 for a deep clean. Further compounding my concerns with the changes that are impacting safe patient practice is the absence of cleaning wipes at the bedside. Nursing for years were required to memorize the right colored wipe container along with the dry time for each colored wipe within the hospital. Some wipes contain bleach and could only be used in certain circumstances due to the damage caused to equipment. Other wipes were allowed only on high-touch surfaces. And when the governing bodies that license hospitals come, nurses were drilled on which wipe and how long to let it dry. I mean, seriously, this was a big deal, and upper management really needed nurses to know what was the best type of infection product to use. And now those wipes are gone. We no longer have the standard wipes, but two different kinds of spray bottles. The first one's a 10-to-1 bleach solution that expires every day, and the other is an antiviral hydrogen peroxide solution that must be sprayed and allowed to dry for 5 minutes on a surface. And that's it. That's what we have. And as we're ready for more surgeries, nursing continues to flex and bend and manage the workflow, taking care of our patients while lowering the standards that we use to protect ourselves and our patients. All the while, no visitors are present. Patients are afraid and lonely and sick. The nurse is the emotional lifeline for the patient and their family. Several times a day, the RN is on the phone or FaceTime, assisting families to connect with their loved one, to understand their diagnosis and the current plan of care. Nurses are pulled from all sides, providing the essential care at the bedside, providing the emotional support to the patient and their family, carefully donning and doffing their reused PPE to protect themselves, their patients, their own families, and any other person they might encounter. And then we clean the patient room. I'll end like this. Yesterday, I had a patient who asked to see my badge so she could see my picture. She said she wanted to see what I really look like. Imagine waking up to a person with a head covering and a mask, eye shield, gowns, and gloves. She was relieved to see my face on my badge to assure her that I was a safe person. We're maxed out. We worry about the safety of our patients. We worry about our own safety and the safety of our families. And we need you to help us to do better work to keep us all protected.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Jody Ponto. Jody, okay, there you go. You were muted for a second there, but we got you unmuted.
Hi, I'm Jody Ponto. I'm an RN. And I'm at home today, and I'm going to go off the video here because I think my connection will probably work a little better. Let me see here. So, like I said, my name is Jody Ponto. I've been a nurse in the nursing field for 29 years. I've been a nurse since 2005. I started as a nursing assistant and when I was 16 years old, and I've gone up the ladder from there. And since nursing assistant class, I remember going over the rules and regulations about following the PPE and all the infection control. And that's kind of where we're at right now. When we hear the other nurses talking about getting reprimanded for not using it properly, but yet we're not being able to even have the equipment available for us. I work at Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center as the state psych hospital, and currently we don't have any COVID positive cases right now. I'm not saying that we're not going to. I'm just kind of waiting for when we actually are going to get a positive case. And it's such a close-knit environment that if we get that, it's going to spread real fast. At the time right now, we are currently using cloth masks and surgical masks, which if this is an airborne disease, of course, is not going to protect us at all with this unless we have PPE. I asked my supervisor the other day if we had any PPE on hand, and he couldn't answer me if we could even have it if we do have a positive patient. So we're putting everyone at risk, the nurse, the patients. We do have patients asking, they're watching the news, because literally what they do all day is like sit and watch the news and talk and communicate, maybe call their families. And when they do that, they come back with us asking us, like, why don't you guys have this PPE, or why don't you guys have this protective equipment, and you guys are going to infect us. And it's kind of a battle that way, and they're just feeling not safe, I guess, if you want to say. I guess the main concern is just my coworkers and I not knowing if we do get a positive patient with the COVID, are we going to be protected? And what happens when we all get sick? Are we going to be able to find other nurses to come in and cover our shifts? I really just don't see that happening. So I just, with a preventative, I just don't understand why we're not protecting the nurses more. It's confusing to me. It's unethical. And I guess that's just my question. And I'm asking that you guys please help us and protect us with whatever you can.
Thank you very, very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Brittany, and I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Livakari.
Very close. So, thank you. My name is Brittany Livakari. I'm a registered emergency nurse at United Hospital. I started my nursing career in New Orleans around the time of Hurricane Katrina. That was a natural disaster that quickly became a man-made disaster due to inadequate preparedness and inaction. Today, we face a pandemic that, much like Katrina, has rapidly changed our community and is quickly becoming a man-made disaster. As a survivor of Hurricane Katrina, it's horrifying to me to see us repeat history once again. Too often, in decisions around healthcare, saving money is prioritized over safe care, and action to save lives is delayed. This is completely unacceptable. Hospitals and other healthcare employees have the duty and responsibility to prepare ahead of time to protect staff and patients. And in situations like the current outbreak, to follow the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle states that we should not wait until we know for sure that something is harmful before we take action to protect people's health. Full precautions means anticipatory or protective action must be taken to prevent possible or further harm. Our community has been successful in pushing back, buying time for the hospital systems here in Minnesota. Unfortunately, United, nurses, and healthcare workers still don't know if our administrators have a complete surge plan. Every day, frontline workers are kept completely in the dark. And we have no idea what the plan is to make sure that we are able to safely provide the care our patients need. Specifically at United, we are being asked to reuse respirators for multiple days, and we are being denied the use of respirators for all but a few aerosolized procedures. We are told by our administration that N95s are not indicated for the general treatment of COVID patients. This idea goes against everything we know as a nurse. Just 3 months ago, if I were to utilize respirators in the manner which I am being told I have to now, I would no longer be allowed to work at United Hospital. And it's very likely I would lose my license and would never be able to practice as a nurse again. In one of the units taking care of rule-out patients, nurses tell us that they're not given access to respirators at all. They report that there are only 5 N95 masks on the floor and that they are kept in a cabinet that is locked at all times. None of the nurses I have talked to, including the ones who serve as charge nurses, have any clue as to where to find this key. So, when a patient's heart stops, these nurses are forced to put themselves at unnecessary risk in order to save that patient's life. This is a month and a half after these nurses made another request for protections. On March 31st, these nurses came to work in their street clothes and asked their manager to provide them with hospital laundered scrubs. They felt that their clothing was not being adequately protected by the PPE that they were provided and did not want to take the clothing they were wearing while providing care into the community, where they fear they could then spread the virus to others. Instead of offering these nurses the simple and completely available protection that they were requesting, not just for themselves, but for their community, three managers from the hospital turned yelling and berating these nurses, minimizing their concerns and accusing them of refusing to work. After almost an hour of berating these nurses, they finally provided them with hospital laundered scrubs, but just for that day. They also docked them a full hour of pay, all because management has so little respect for the concerns of nurses and other healthcare providers. In the emergency room where I work, several staff RNs and techs, with the recommendation of our provider group, chose to don on the scrubs that are provided to our doctors as a matter of course. But the administrators at United Hospital have decided that this act, which protects nurses, their family, and their communities from the spread of COVID, is grounds for discipline, including termination. Because heaven forbid, any nurse or tech should fail to wear the uniform that they are prescribed by the hospital administration. So far, one ER nurse has been terminated due to this violation of dress code, and several others will likely soon be fired as well. Another sign of our hospital's failure to prioritize safe patient care over the pursuit of its profits is in the manner of which they have resumed elective procedures. While they have promised to prioritize safety, already we have found that the hospital has denied staff preparing for surgeries the protection of N95 masks while performing COVID tests on their patients. We have found that in several cases, the decision makers in our surgical arena have taken to the liberty to presume that the tests that have not been returned with results that are negative, And in presuming that these results are negative, they have deemed that protective gear like respirators are unwarranted, recklessly risking the lives of my coworkers who are taking care of these patients. Every day as we enter United Hospital, we have to fight our administration tooth and nail just to get the protections we need. I cannot lie, sometimes we win. Sometimes we're able to convince them to do the right thing. We had to persuade the administration to allow asthmatic nurses to wear N95s at work. We were able to eventually convince the administration that nurses taking care of cancer patients shouldn't be working with COVID patients, only to go back the next day and care for their immunocompromised chemotherapy patients. But the struggle is tiring. Even on the days we win, we feel like we're only treading water. And when the flood hits our tail, we won't be prepared, because hospital administrations actions had deemed that it was more important to adopt lean management practice, protect precious equipment from the workers who need it to protect their lives, exercise control over employees, enforce the dress code policy, and resume elective procedures, then to make sure that we have the supplies and plans in place we need to protect ourselves.
Thank you so much for being willing to share your story and for the work that you do. Next, we have Kara Spike.
Hi, my name is Kara Spike, and I've been an RN for 23 years in Minnesota. As a child, I suffered a chronic illness and spent many years in and out of the hospital, many times for months on end. From that experience, I decided at the age of 9 that I wanted to be a nurse, not just any nurse, one of the good ones, unlike some that I had heard through my illness. I went to a 4-year college and got my degree. I learned a lot in school, but I learned the most from the first 6 months of my career, most from nurses that had been on the job for 30 years. They took me under their wing and showed me the ropes. One of the first lessons was on infection control. Hand washing was the gold standard. MRSA or C. diff, always wear a gown one time and discard. Wear gloves one time and discard those. TB patient, you wear your N95 mask. You keep the door closed in a negative pressure room. When done with those cares, everything is thrown in the garbage. Never wear these things more than one time to prevent the spread, and always wash your hands when you're done. On March 11th, I went to work on my usual floor as I have done for many years. We had just started hearing on the news about the new respiratory illness called COVID-19 that had been in China and now was in New York. I thought we had at least a couple of weeks before we'd start seeing these patients in the hospital. Assignments were being handed out. Kara, you have a COVID positive patient today. Imagine my surprise. I had heard a lot on the news about China and saw the medical staff in hazmat type suits, no skin showing. All were wearing N95 masks as it was considered airborne. Thinking of this, I asked, okay, where is the gear or suit I need to care for this patient? I was told we only had surgical mask, a gown, and gloves. We were also given a face shield that covered to my nose. The other option was a pair of plastic eyewear. My panic set in. How is this right, a surgical mask? They are used by a surgeon to protect the patient from the surgeon's possible germs through speaking, not to protect the surgeon. There are gaps on the side of the mask and at the top where it covers your nose. This would not protect me from any airborne droplets if the patient coughs. When I started to ask questions, I was met with, we are following CDC guidelines and a surgical mask is appropriate. I started looking into the CDC recommendations on infection control and COVID. At first, they said N95. Then after realizing the country had a shortage of them, downgraded the recommendation to a surgical mask unless providing an aerosolized treatment. They actually downgraded their infection control policy to account for their lack of PPE. They then followed it up with, when an N95 becomes more accessible, return to using N95s when treating all persons under investigation and COVID-positive patients. How is this right? You would not send a soldier into battle without giving him a gun or a bulletproof vest. We are to fight this invisible beast without proper protection. Nurses, doctors, and other medical personnel are dying in New York, Italy, and beyond with these guidelines. Each time we asked, we were always met with, we are following CDC guidelines. The CDC failed us. The hospital systems failed us. The federal and state government also failed us. I then began to take action. If the hospital system wasn't going to protect us, then we needed to take it into our own hands to protect ourselves. I began asking people if they had any N95 masks they could donate to me or to my unit. Some of these coworkers I had been with for all 23 years. They are my work family, and the thought of losing some of them because of the lack of protection to this beast was unacceptable. My brother gave me some from his automotive company. A neighbor dropped off several from his construction job. I did a story with the Star Tribune in hopes of raising awareness of what was happening in our hospitals. Donations came pouring in. I was able to keep my unit stocked with N95s until we were finally, 6 weeks later, given one N95 mask for a whole shift to be reused for more shifts after that. I was told that I needed to keep these donated masks out of sight as management may confiscate them, as it didn't follow the policy and procedure. Someone in the community dropped off 100 N95 masks to my unit and they were taken away. On March 12th, my unit was told at 1:30 p.m. that we were sending all of our patients off to take only COVID PUIs and positive patients until Bethesda was up and running. We didn't have any N95s. Face shields were more like clear sunglasses, a gown, and a supply of gloves that were running low. Not to mention, we had several instances where we ran out of hand sanitizer. Our anxiety was running high. We were told to do one thing a certain way, and then an hour later, a new huddle was called and said that we had updated information and we are now to do it a different way. This is how it has been for the last 6 weeks. The lack of preparedness is unacceptable. 2 weeks ago, we were told that gowns were running short and that we would have to reuse gowns. Never in my 23 years have we ever been told it was okay to reuse a gown. And now that we're fighting COVID, it was okay because we didn't have enough. We use fabric gowns. They just need to be washed. Can we wash them faster? Now we have an N95 that we have to wear for the whole day, save in a paper bag for 5 days, and reuse again. For those who need a particular N95 mask, we have run out and they are using the same mask indefinitely until more come in. Gowns that we wear all day for one patient, we are folding them ever so carefully to try and keep it clean. It's like trying to fold a fitted sheet and do it perfectly every time. Not to mention, if we're in a hurry to get in and take care of a choking patient, with the starting of surgical procedures again, we fear there will be further shortage. I signed up to be a nurse. It is the only thing I've ever wanted to do, but my family did not. Not only am I not protected at work during this time, I have the worry that I could be bringing it home. I have a 6-year-old daughter who has severe asthma. We have to give her nebulizer treatments daily to keep her lungs functioning as best they can. She's prone to pneumonia and just had it the first week in March. Was it COVID? Nobody was testing at that time. When I get home from work, I change out of my scrubs, put them in the laundry and head to the shower before I can give my kids hugs or help with dinner. My very job affects everyone in the house. My kids are not allowed to go anywhere or play with neighbors because of my exposure to COVID. They don't understand why. My husband has to put my daughter to bed at night because I fear that closeness could expose her to COVID if I am a silent carrier. I have thought about sleeping and living in a separate part of the house, but I chose to social distance and still be around my family. My father died last September, and my 85-year-old mother lives by herself. I'm no longer able to hug her or help her at home as I don't want to risk infecting her. As the state begins to open up, we are still on lockdown. This is my reality. It is my job and I love my job. I just wish that I felt protected in doing it. Each day when we go to work, we are scared. We don't know if the PPE that we are being forced to reuse is contaminated. The danger that we face is real, as evidenced by the fact that so far 1,949 healthcare workers have tested positive in Minnesota. If infection control was practiced as it has been taught so many years ago, and if the CDC hadn't downgraded their infection policy to fit the supply chain, maybe the thousands of healthcare workers who have died from COVID would still be alive today. Please help us get the protections that we need so that this doesn't ever have to happen again. Our lives depend on it.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Sarah Simons from Hennepin County Medical Center, and then we're going to go back through and have questions for the nurses. Sarah.
Yes, my name is Sarah Simons. I work on a med-surg oncology unit at a metro hospital. I first heard about a cache of masks, 1860s, at a security and safety subcommittee in February 2020. 2020. Our employee occupational health and wellness director mentioned it during the course of the meeting when COVID was just on the verge of becoming a concern to Minnesota. Instead, they had been provided to the hospital in response to the H1N1 outbreak in 2009. Through the month of March and into April, we continued to hear about COVID-19 and were told that simple face masks were adequate protection according to the CDC, and that would be the level of protection provided to healthcare workers, including nurses, unless performing an aerosolizing procedure. Many of us, myself included, are convinced that this was a decision led by supply issues rather than by science. The precautionary principle of using higher levels of protection for risks that remain unclear, such as COVID, was not followed by my employer. Even when healthcare workers were allowed to use their appropriate level of protection, the N95 respirators, the employer failed to provide a safe and reliable supply. The 1870s that were in storage entered circulation for use by healthcare workers in April. The expiration dates on the boxes were 2001 and 2002. The manufacturer's suggested shelf life is 5 years. They were old when provided to the hospital for the H1N1 epidemic. The original bands were brittle and some crumbled and broke as employees attempted to put them on. Even worse, the bands broke while the nurse provided care to a patient positive for COVID in the patient room, causing an exposure. An OSHA report was filed. OSHA decided not to do an on-site investigation. That was on March 27th that the original OSHA report was filed. The employer did take the masks out of circulation and attempted to fix them by removing all the old bands and replacing them with stapled blue rubber bands. This work was manually done in a basement of the hospital, and workers were observed to do this work without masks and without gloves. The 1870s were in open containers as opposed to the sealed packaging typical of medical equipment. Even worse, the blue bands that they applied were too long, and when healthcare workers put them on, they were too loose and the seal could not be formed. Without a proper seal, the mask is worthless. Another OSHA report was filed, this one in terms of the longer bands and also the failure of the employer to perform fit testing for nurses. The employer took them out of circulation again and had workers again manually remove the blue bands. This time they sent them out to a manufacturer, Donald's Service, who donated services to ultrasonically staple new bands. The masks were returned to the hospital where workers handled them with bare hands and again put them back into open packaging and put them into boxes. The boxes of 1870s with open packaging then went to the storeroom for distribution. The four bands are now too tight on most people. Through these many weeks, nurses advocated for the right level of protection, and we eventually opted to provide our own, since the hospital did not. The hospital prohibited this action for about 4 weeks before relenting to allow healthcare workers to bring their own. The hospital did provide limited review for the PPE to help ensure it met appropriate standards. But the CNO also stated that there would be no PPE police. In other words, nurses were free to bring their own PPE and protect themselves because the hospital did not provide the adequate level of protection according to science. Nurses and allies have provided a small number of N95s, and there have been dozens of nurses, clinic nurses, hospital nurses, who have availed themselves of our supply in lieu of the substandard level of protection allowed by the hospital. I also work as a charge nurse on the unit. It's a 58-bed med-surg oncology unit, and we have 14 nurses that take care of the 58 patients over the course of the shift. On a Friday when I was there, one of the nurses had just a horrific day. She had a COVID-positive patient, and all the while she was taking care of this patient and her other four patients, it was under duress. She did not feel that the simple surgical mask and face shield offered her adequate protection. She feared about bringing home any kind of infection to her husband who has asthma. When she returned on Monday and had and noticed on the assignment sheet that she was going to care for those same patients again. She just said she almost had called in that Monday because she was in such duress about having to come and care for patients. And then over the course of the weekend, having that feeling turn into fury that the employer that has the responsibility to provide a safe work environment failed to provide a safe work environment for this nurse. At that point, because we had supply available to us, we, meaning the nurses ourselves, we were able to provide her with an N95 and she could work through her day with a much higher level of confidence that she had adequate protection to keep her family safe from potential infection coming home on her own body. Just last week on May 11th, our hospital expanded the use of N95s for all healthcare workers taking care of COVID positive and persons under investigation, while still in advocating for conservation of PPE, along with, of course, elective surgeries. It was not stated why the greater access was provided, but there's strong speculation it is because a care area not provided with this level of protection has a high employee infection rate of COVID-19. When the hospital was challenged about these expired masks, going back to the 1870s, it referenced the CDC's guidance on using expired masks at a time of shortage. Even the CDC's research reached back only as far as 2003 to test the integrity of the filtration. These masks were 2001 and 2002. As healthcare professionals, we are trained to check expiration dates on everything. Saline bags, medication, IV pump tubing, wound dressing packaging, even applesauce. These dates are supposed to mean something, and they do. When a product is past its expiration, it is not expected to perform at the level for which it was intended. Another practice that fell by the wayside is fit testing. When the employer was overwhelmed with the need to fit test more people to a different style of mask, they said seal checks were sufficient. Again, this was a directive from the CDC. As recently as January, if an employee had failed to do an annual fit test, they would have been taken off the schedule, not permitted to work, and could face discipline. That carries the idea that it is an important safety issue that must be maintained. This is not the time to jettison safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Now we'll go to questions from the nurses, from members for the nurses. And I will say we also have Shannon Cunningham from the Minnesota Nurses Association. She's their government relations director, and she's also available for questions that are technical in nature that the practicing nurses may not be able to answer. And I see in the group chat, I don't know if this is how questions work in Zoom committees, but I'm going to presume that's how they work, that Representative Garofalo has a question for Ms. Moss. And I'll let you unmute yourself and ask your question. And if Ms. Moss is still here, she can answer it.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And it's the question is really quick for people, and it really could go to Ms. Cunningham as well, is that I believe I heard Ms. Moss say that the more frequently a person is exposed to the virus, that the severity for those who are infected becomes a more serious, more severity, and it's more fatal. Can they just elaborate on that and where we just kind of give us some background on where that's coming from?
Well, there is research. Can I speak?
Yeah, there you are, Ms. Moss. Okay.
So there is current research. It's not really completely available, but we do know that healthcare workers are getting sicker than other people. And in the past, viruses, the viral load is how much virus that you're spewing off, or that a patient or a person gets. So it's how much virus is out there. And the more virus that is like on a door handle, if you have one particle of virus, you're less likely to get sick than if there's 1,000 parts of virus sitting there. And so when a healthcare worker is exposed over and over again, they're more likely to get sick. And some people, like I think with SARS, they said that amount of virus, it was so large when people are really sick and they spew off a lot of virus that they get sicker. It's unknown if that is really true in this case, but we do know that healthcare workers are getting sicker And these are young people. People are in their 30s are dying. They have people in their 20s that do not have a comorbidity to die, and they are dying. So there has to be something to do with viral load. Does that make sense?
Madam Speaker and testifier, we've had nurses in their 30s in Minnesota die from this?
Not in Minnesota. We haven't had a death in Minnesota, but there are nurses in the United States that have been in their 30s that have died, and healthcare workers. And in China, I believe there was a nurse that was 23. And some of it has to do with the immune response of the nurse. So if you're very well and you have a really good immune response, you're less likely to get sick. However, when you are overworked and tired and exhausted, you're more likely to get sick.
Sure.
And Representative Garofalo. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. So good information to have. And I guess I understand why people would be much more likely to be infected if they worked in healthcare. You know, it just makes sense that if you're around those who are infected, you're at a greater risk than the average population. Same thing goes with, you know, young school teachers and the winter and the flu and ailments like that. I guess I was zeroing in more on the, if you are more frequently exposed to the virus, while you may be more likely to get infected, but if you're more frequently exposed to it, that the health consequences are going to be more severe. That's the side I was focusing on. And it's something that if that's been proven and is happening, would suggest that we should have a much different state policy in addressing COVID-19 than we currently are right now. I have not seen that data yet, but I would really, if that is something that it's anecdotal, that's one thing, but if it's been something that has been published, I think we should reflect that in our public policy, because right now our public policy is not reflected.
Representative Garofalo, I think that's a good question for epidemiologists. You know, what I heard Ms. Moss say was that it's like radiation. The more exposure, the worse. And that certainly seems consistent with what we're seeing in the popular press, which is the amount of viral load that you're exposed to varies in how susceptible a person would be to getting it. So we'll get some more information for committee members from the Minnesota Department of Health. Representative Liebling, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. And I'm just really interested to hear first of all, let me just say thank you all so much for your testimony. And thank you for your incredible work. I mean, it is really just, I don't even know what to say about hearing some of your stories. I mean, it's very moving. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's inspiring, but it is inspiring, the work that you all are doing in the face of this incredible danger that you're facing. And this member really appreciates that so very much. The question goes to really the CDC guidelines that you're talking about. And I had not heard this before, that the guidelines don't seem to be protective. And I'm wondering if any of you can talk about, is this a change? I mean, obviously the COVID-19 is new, but infectious disease is not. And is there a change, and does anyone know whether, you know, what kind of scientific evidence is supporting the guidelines that the CDC puts out around this? And just some more information about that piece of the whole discussion, if you could. I'm not really sure who can answer that best. I know on Zoom it's really hard to throw out an open question to everybody, but maybe Ms. Cunningham can address that, or maybe she can tell us who best could.
Well, Representative Liebling, I also see Brittany nodding her head. Okay. So first I'll go to Ms. Cunningham, and then if Brittany would like to respond, we'll give her a chance as well. Ms. Cunningham, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's weird to be before the committee as opposed to behind it, but thank you guys. So Madam Chair, members of the committee, so in our estimation, the only reason that the CDC guidelines has changed is based on the availability of PPE. I think as Brittany referenced in her testimony, as of late, the last few years, many hospitals have been moving to what we call the lean model. It comes from the Toyota Corporation, in which they do things in a different way. They try to, you know, have less supplies on hand so that they're not wasting them. They try to do everything in a very lean way. unfortunately, what we've seen is, as we are facing this crisis right now, we did not have enough PPE on hand. Hospitals barely had enough to cover the initial stage of it. And so the CDC had to come in. They had to make some contingency capacity recommendations to hospitals on how they would handle PPE. And essentially what it means is it is not at all based on scientific evidence. It is only based on availability of PPE. And it sets standards for, depending on how much PPE is available, there are certain ways that they can use it, which then allows them to have some reuse of that PPE. And so that's the place that nurses are at right now, is they are continually having to reuse the same N95 masks over and over and over. Whereas if we're at the pre-COVID standard of PPE, they would literally be changing in and out their mask with every single time they went into a patient's room. And I think Brittany can talk a little bit more about that from her experience on the floor specifically.
Brittany, go ahead.
Just to echo what Shannon said, it's spot on. Never should we base the type of care that we provide our patients based on what supplies we have. Even if you think of it on a little bit more simple terminology, if you need an MRI, we don't say, I'm sorry, the hospital can't provide it, we're not giving it to you. We send you somewhere where you can get an MRI. So the CDC guidelines are basically basing how we are caring for our patients or protecting ourselves based off of the supply chain and what's available.
Thank you. Representative Haley has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, I don't see on the agenda that you have anybody from MDH scheduled on the call, because to my understanding, MDH is following the same guidelines as the CDC, and the MDH guidelines would dictate how we are using PPE to fight COVID, and they're also in charge of the supply chain. So I think it would be important to have their perspective, wondering if anybody is on the call that can speak to that.
Today, we didn't have anybody from the Minnesota Department of Health on the agenda or available. Wanted to focus on what's happening at our hospitals to hear from the nurses in the hospitals, but we can certainly follow up with MDH to the extent that they are articulating the standards that are being implemented by the hospitals. And I hope that Mary Krinke, I know she's got a full burden here with speaking for all the hospitals that the nurses have talked about, but to the extent that she can speak to the guidelines that MDH is issuing to the hospitals and the interaction between the state regulatory environment and what hospitals are doing, that would be helpful. Next, Representative Schultz has a question.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, I have a question. First of all, I'm also hearing these similar stories from nurses in Duluth, that if they have a patient that may have COVID-19, they're not being given PPE. I just would like to know from the nurses here today, have you been involved in writing the grant applications or in meetings to provide input on what hospitals need when they apply for our state COVID funding?
Any nurse who would like to respond if you've been involved in your hospital's conversation about the grant applications?
No, our hospital did not make us aware of any grant applications. They've kept us out of any kind of incident command, and there is a position of the nurses that we would like to be a part of that, because as frontline workers, we understand what the needs are at the front line and feel that we are in a good position applying for the needed.
It looks like we're having a little bit of trouble with Sarah's audio, but I think folks heard that for the most part, her experience has been not being involved. I don't know, Ms. Cunningham, on behalf of the nurses, if you want to let us know if there's varying experiences between nurses at different facilities.
The essential answer to the question is no. We do not know of any nurses who are direct bedside nurses who have been involved in those decision-making processes at any of the facilities across Minnesota. Essentially, the nurses have been shut out from any input, which is very different than what we experienced during the Ebola crisis a few years ago.
Thank you. Representative Dowda has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the nurses for the work that you do to keep everybody safe. We certainly appreciate that, and certainly working under conditions that I think we all wish were better during these difficult times. We have heard you about the PPE. That's very obvious. We in the legislature have appropriated now $400 million, $200 million of which was to go to hospitals, $200 million of which administration has been using to purchase supplies, PPE. I know I'm on the little committee that has to approve those expenditures by the governor when they come out, and I know we've approved on numerous occasions money for masks. I'm told that Minnesota Department of Health has a report on PPE, and they claim there is PPE. I was just struck by one of the nurses' comments about, the PPE. And, you know, here's my point. There's not a storeroom of PPE at these hospitals that the management is hiding from you, I'm certain, right? So they don't have it. If they had it, they would be giving it to you. So where is it? The MDE reports say that we have it. They say that we're not low on it. Are they just still rationing it too much? Or how do we get more of it? Does it just not exist out there? We can't get enough to treat patients the way we normally would. The comment that struck me was about we shouldn't ever change the way we treat patients based on what supplies we have. And I totally agree with that. But in the situation where you don't have the supplies, I think we're forced to. And we shouldn't have to. And our job as policymakers, and especially those that appropriate the money, is we should figure out then how to get it to you. If I know that's the message that you want us to hear, and I have heard that loud and clear. So we want to do that, and we feel like we have appropriated money for that. We have the federal money. We're certainly willing to appropriate more money if that's what it takes. But where is the PPE? And that's maybe not a question these nurses can answer. Maybe Mary Krinke can answer it. And maybe to Barb Haley's point, and on a future one of these, maybe we should talk to somebody at MDH or somewhere to figure out if there's a supply line problem. But loud and clear, we're hearing that you need more PPE, and that message has been received.
Representative Dowd, that is kind of a good segue. We haven't heard from Mary Krinke yet. I know Representative Winkler has a question, and Representative Winkler, if you have a question for one of the nurses, let's do that now, and then let's go to Mary Krinke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question isn't actually directly to the nurses. It's that they raised this issue of whether we are being clear that we are not meeting scientific standards for the use of PPE and instead are shifting to a public message of adequacy of PPE based on the fact that this is how much PPE we have rather than this is how much we should have. And so as Ms. Krinke comes forward with her testimony, I hope that she will address this concern raised by the nurses. I would like to know whether we have changed the standard for PPE use based on perceived availability and readiness in order to build confidence versus being clear about not having enough so that we, I don't know what the motivation would be. I can speculate, but I'd like to hear specifically whether the standard is based on science or whether it's based on availability.
So I think we'll ask if any of the nurses have a perspective that they want to share on that, and then we'll go to Mary Krinke for the Minnesota Hospital Association.
This is Mary Turner, president of Minnesota Nurses. As I alluded to at the beginning of my speech, I kind of made that example of how fast the PPE is being used. And so Representative Dowd, you're correct in the sense that our hospitals are having to use PPE at a level they have never had to use before. On my 13-bed unit, you may have, 3-4 people in isolation, you know, with different C. diff or whatever. Now everybody is, and we're having multiple units where we're having to use the PPE. I do not doubt that in the least. I also alluded to the fact that the supply chains have been very not secure, not necessarily secure. That's been an ongoing problem. And that's where I alluded to what our National Nurses United and at the federal level, and we have all spoken to our federal representatives about the Defense Production Act or whatever that's called, where everybody starts to make it more, you know, make more of it. That's not to say we haven't had companies that have risen to the challenge, but it hasn't been a coordinated effort.
What do you mean by the word secure when you say it? I apologize.
Well, an example, like, okay, we had about a month ago at the task force, the governor said himself, we had 1 million masks on their way to Minnesota, and then they got rerouted somewhere. That's what I mean by, by our administrators going, we're on our fifth try trying to get PPE. That's what I mean.
Thank you.
The supply lines not being secure.
Thank you, Madam President. I hear lots of voices, but I feel like I know we only have 18 minutes left, and I would like to hear from the Minnesota Hospital Association. I think that this committee has really benefited a lot from the voices of the nurses, and there's a lot of follow-up that will come out of this. But let's give the Hospital Association a chance to testify, and then we'll conclude with questions. Mary Krenke, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and members of this committee. My name for the record is Mary Krenke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association, and we represent hospitals and healthcare systems across the state. I actually want to thank the speaker for creating this new select committee of the legislature of the Minnesota House. Over the course of the next several months, we know that this is going to be an ongoing challenge. And there may be issues that arise that we need legislative action or legislative input. And without the regular committee structure in place, this really does create an opportunity for legislators to have questions and ongoing hearings. And quite sadly, this issue is not going away. So I'm actually very grateful that this select committee has been established and look forward to working with you all over the next several months. Minnesota hospitals and health systems continue to do everything we can to keep our healthcare workforce safe and to keep them healthy. We know that we need them to be healthy in order to care for our patients. As caregivers, we prioritize the health of our patients, the health of our communities, and the health of our workforce. We know that is going to be needed now more than ever. Our frontline care team members. The success of keeping our patients healthy means we need to keep our doctors, our nurses, our respiratory therapists, and yes, our environmental staffs working and keep them healthy. And we know that this is somewhat reliant on our ongoing ability to secure and keep personal protective equipment available for them to use. Minnesota hospitals and health systems recognized early on that this pandemic would likely put enormous pressure on our healthcare infrastructure. Would there be a shortage of ICU beds? Would there be a shortage of ventilators, a shortage of medicine, a shortage of staff, and yes, potentially a shortage of personal protective equipment? And we've been busy the last several months trying to secure these items. We've worked in partnership, and I want to be clear here, we have worked in partnership with Governor Walz from the beginning of this. And we strongly supported two of Governor Walz's executive orders. And yes, they were controversial, but we supported Governor Walz's executive order of the stay-at-home policy, as well as the executive order regarding elective procedures that were not deemed to be emergency or life issues for our patients. Those two executive orders, while yes, a little controversial, they did buy the hospitals and the healthcare community the much needed time over the last several weeks here, and we have made a dramatic improvement to where we were over a month ago. So we have in the course over the last month increased our ICU bed capacity, and working with the state, we have purchased hundreds of ventilators that are now on site.
And we have somewhat, at least for now, stabilized the personal protective equipment supply. And I say that somewhat because I want to be clear, it is always changing. And I actually agree with Mary Turner's comments that this is somewhat frustrating as we watch the state and whether or not supplies have come in or not come in. But the situation is better than it was a month ago. And we have done this because of the governor's executive orders. MHA was also pleased when the governor announced that his commissioner of administration, Alice Roberts Davis, was selected to be in charge of the state's personal protective equipment purchasing and procurement policy. She has overseen this extremely difficult task of trying to manage our state supply chain. And unlike other durable equipment, ventilators, the PPE supply is very subject to changes. What happens if there's a spike in the number of COVID patients? Or what happens if there's a hot spot in one part of the state, as we've seen now in some of our Southwest communities? If there's a spike, you can go through PPE perhaps much faster than you thought you were going to. So we're very pleased that the governor has assigned somebody to this task and is working on it. The state has also done a good job of trying to add some transparency to this process. I would encourage you all to look at the state's website. And what the website has on there, it has a list of critical care supplies that are on hand. And on this website, it lists all of the personal protective equipment. It lists and it identifies face masks, face shields, gloves, gowns, and the all-important N95 masks that we've heard so much about today. This website looks at what is currently at hand, on hand at the hospitals, what is in the state warehouses, and what has been procured but not yet arrived. And that is some of the most controversial part of this and anxiety there, because the state has purchased N95 masks that have failed to arrive. I think it was Ms. Cunningham who alluded to that they've gotten sometimes diverted to other locations. But this website does look at what do we do have here on hand in Minnesota. There is one topic that is a little controversial that I wasn't going to raise, but I think it is important to bring it out and to share it. And that is the issue of hospital issued scrubs. To be clear, and I want to go on the record, scrubs are not considered part of personal protective equipment. The CDC nor MDH does not consider scrubs part of personal protective equipment. It is not part of the state's supply cachet. They are not purchasing it as part of their COVID response. Some of our hospitals have been able to provide nurses and other healthcare workers with scrubs. Others have not. But I think what's important here is that this is an issue that is being dealt with and discussed within the collective bargaining units of each of our hospitals. So if nurses have concerns about the scrub issue, this should be brought forward within their local collective bargaining units. I would like to discuss the communications and what has happened really within our hospitals over the past month. Hospitals have dramatically increased the amount of communications we are having with our frontline care teams. Hospitals, some of them are doing daily meetings with all of the union representatives. Daily meetings are happening at some of our hospitals. Most all of our hospitals have moved to daily emails to all staff to share the latest information on how best to care for a COVID patient, whether that be updates from CDC or updates from our Minnesota Department of Health or educational training information. Almost all of our hospitals are now doing system-wide emails to our healthcare workers. Most hospitals are also doing what we call daily team huddles on all units of the hospital. And these daily team huddles allow everyone, regardless of whether or not they're a nurse's aide, anyone on that unit to share input. And that is directed to then the chief nursing officer. So there is a process in place for getting input involvement from all of our healthcare workers. We heard from one of our healthcare systems this week that since they created their COVID-19 command center, they have received and have communicated 140 different times with their frontline labor partners, either through meetings or telephone conversations. So I just want to go on record that hospitals are doing everything we can to communicate with our frontline workers. MHA recognizes, and this is a topic that did come up in the conversation today, we recognize that our nurses have increased anxiety about the resumption of elective procedures, and this has added to some of the concerns about the supply of personal protective equipment. And I want to go on record as saying MHA shares many of those concerns. We know that we need to have an adequate supply of PPE, not only for our patients who need surgical procedures, but then also to protect our frontline care workers. So there is this balance between what do our patients need who need surgery and other procedures versus the PPE that our staff is going to need to care for COVID patients. We stand ready. We stand ready with our nurses. If we see the supplies of PPE dropping dangerously low, that we may need to go back to Governor Walz and ask that the dials be turned back, and that perhaps we have to go back to the previous executive orders regarding elective procedures. And I only say this very cautiously, because I want you all to know that the delay of elective procedures was costing Minnesota hospitals about $31 million a day, not an insignificant amount of money. But if we see the PPE supplies are getting precariously low, we will stand with our nurses to ask that those procedures be turned, the dial turns back down. So with that, Madam Chair, I just would like to say I want to thank you for having this hearing today. I agree with what Representative Liebling said about the stories of our nurses. We know they're working very, very hard under very difficult circumstances. I also want to say thank you to the legislature. You all worked very hard under difficult circumstances, too, the last couple months here. So thank you for your continued support of hospitals and continued support of our healthcare infrastructure. And I'd be happy to answer questions that you all may have with other people on the phone here in the last few minutes of this hearing. Thank you.
Sure. A couple comments, and then we'll go to Representative New for a question. One is we have this select committee, but we still do have all the other committees of the legislature. And I would not be surprised if there are interim hearings on a lot of different topics related to the pandemic. I mean, the pandemic has, as you all know, a public health emergency, but it's also a policy challenge unlike any we have seen in my lifetime. And that means that the Minnesota legislature, while no longer in regular session, is really still on the job. And so I wouldn't be surprised if several of the committees had hearings. And this select committee is not intended as a substitute for the regular committees, but just one more forum to bring folks together. The other thing is that I recognize that you're in a little bit of a difficult position as the leader of a group that represents many different healthcare providers, many different hospitals, and where there may be different situations at different hospitals that you would not be the person in the best situation to respond to a very specific situation. So I do appreciate that difficulty for you and appreciate your testimony and your time here today. Representative New.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and members. My question for Ms. Krenke is, so we've heard a lot about the CDC guidelines regarding PPE today. I'm wondering if there's any variation with MDH. Is MDH, have they provided any guidelines that might not be in line with CDC, and what guidance is the hospital association following on that?
Representative, keep wanting to call you representative. What is it? Executive director? Is that the title, or is it Madam President? I always love when I can say Madam President.
No, it's I am Vice President of Government Relations.
There we go.
You can call me Mary.
Okay, Mary. Ball's in your court.
Okay. Madam Speaker and Representative New, on April the 10th, Minnesota Department of Health issued guidelines to the hospitals on how to handle personal protective equipment. That came out on April the 8th and then follow up on April the 10th. The Minnesota Department of Health can be more restrictive than the CDC guidelines, but they would certainly never be less restrictive than the CDC guidelines. So the hospitals are following CDC guidelines as well as MDH guidelines. So MDH has clear instructions to us regarding the use of personal protective equipment. We are following, all hospitals are following MDH and CDC guidelines.
And we have two last questions from members. We'll try to squeeze in the last 3 minutes here. Representative Winkler and then Representative Moran. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Ms. Krinke, are the CDC and MDH guidelines the same guidelines that would be used if we were following the sound science and the most protective standards for healthcare workers?
Madam Speaker and Representative Winkler, I would like to share with you all an example that is a little different than, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I would like to share with you something that happened the other day that I think was very enlightening to me. The hospitals, there were several of them that were down to their last 3-day supply of gowns. And they were, this was long before any elective procedures were being brought back on. And we were down to a 3-day supply of gowns, and they were calling me daily. They were calling the state's incident command center. They were calling. We desperately need gowns. And the state's incident command center, and this is the state's operations, made a decision to purchase rain ponchos. I'm not exaggerating, not making this up. The state purchased rain ponchos. Now, under normal situations, you probably wouldn't say that a rain poncho would make a very good gown. But according to the experts, a rain poncho actually protects employees pretty darn well. Nobody had really thought of using a rain poncho instead of a gown. So under ideal circumstances, that purchase, State Emergency Command Center purchased rain ponchos for hospitals to use instead of gowns. So in answer to your question, if it was brought up that the CDC changed their guidance, it may have indeed been because they felt there was a shortage nationwide. This shortage of personal protective equipment is not just here in Minnesota. It's not just in our country. It is global. So, yes, there have probably been decisions that have been made somewhat based on the supply chain. And so when the nurses say, how come we can't get an N95 every day, and that's what they used to be able to get, they're right. That was pre-pandemic. And we are doing things differently than we used to do. Believe you me, I hope we can go back to the days where a nurse can get a new N95 every single day. This is not about the money. This is about being able to physically get our hands on this personal protective equipment. So we are following the guidance that we have been given by the Minnesota Department of Health and the CDC. And we hope that the state, I really would be interested in having the commissioner come in and talk about what the state is doing to try to get more PPE into Minnesota. I think that would be enlightening for both the nurses and for the Minnesota Hospital Association.
Just a final comment, Madam Chair, and that is, based on the testimony I've heard today, it sounds to me like we are making compromises about the safety of healthcare professionals in hospitals because of a shortage of equipment. And that's understandable in a pandemic because in some ways we weren't prepared and we didn't have a choice. But to return then to life as usual and elective procedures, that may also be the right choice. But it should be noted that it is at the sacrifice of the health and safety of healthcare workers. And that's, to me, what it sounds like we are doing right now.
Madam Chair, if I may, there's the safety and the care of patients who have had delayed procedures. What do you have if you have a
a tumor that needs to be removed? What happens if you have a surgical, you're in intense pain? We've had patients that didn't get procedures for the last 2 months, and that was the right decision to make. But we need to be able to bring some of those procedures back for the care of all of our patients. It is a balancing. Representative Winkler, I totally agree with you. It is a balancing act. It is a balancing act. And we are going to have to look at the supply chain versus what are we doing to care for our patients who still need procedures. So,
all right, folks, we are 1 minute over time at this moment, but we will take the final two member questions and then we'll close. Representative Moran and then Representative Carlson, and that'll be it for today. Representative Moran. We need you to, there you go. There you go. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask Ms. Krinke, as we look at what I hear from the nurses, that they are scared, they feel unprotected, they feel like the hospitals are not communicating with them, which tells me maybe at some time in the past there has been some direct communication. And what I heard from you is that the hospital are talking with the nurse representatives. So each hospital is different. Each management is different. We are in a pandemic where folks are scared. They're taking COVID-19 home. Is it a way to hospitals to invest in nurses in direct relationship with the nurses that are part of those individual institutions instead of talking to representatives? Because evidently that communication is not trickling down to them. And they want to know how to best to keep themselves safe. Is there a way for that to happen?
Ms. Krinke.
Madam Chair and Representative Moran, I certainly take these comments today to heart, and this is something that we can continue to improve on. I do feel that hospitals are doing much more in direct communications with all of their frontline healthcare providers and nurses and nurses' aides, and they're doing much more communications than they were 3 months ago. So I think it's gotten better, and that doesn't mean that there aren't things that we can't improve on. And I do understand the anxiety about this personal protective equipment. I am very pleased the state, if I can, just one more thing. Hospitals used to be only allowed to reorder supplies from the state's cachet every 3 days. And now we are able to do it if we need supplies. If our stock on hand is below 3 days, that used to be the criteria. Now we can order supplies even if we have a 7 days on hand. So I do think that that should help with some of the anxiety of our healthcare workers. If we can keep more stock on hand by going to a week of supplies on hand at the hospitals rather than that original 3 days, that was just too tight for our healthcare workers for hospitals to only have 3 days on hand. So I'm hoping the situation's getting better.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Speaker, my question is a quick one. I know you're in overtime, but listening to the discussion about the supply chain, and I know some clinics now are starting to open up. And is that creating a problem for our hospitals, which are dealing with critical need cases? It would be kind of elective type doctor's appointments at the clinics and so on. And I assume that they have to be following various guidelines as well. And is that creating a problem on a supply chain for our hospitals? And I guess that would be of Mary Krinke.
Ms. Krinke.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson. It potentially could cause problems. I would like to say that the state's purchases of PPE is entirely for COVID patients only. So the state's purchases are not supposed to go to clinics or ambulatory surgical centers or other sites that may be caring for patients. They are responsible for getting their own supplies of PPE. So the state's purchases are for COVID-only patients. But yes, there's a potential if we get into a surge or the situation gets really bad that those elective procedures we may ask the governor to change that dial back again.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, members, and thank you so much to the testifiers, to the nurses who were here today, and the Minnesota Hospital Association. We I think you heard from legislators across the partisan divide. I think Representative Dowd and I are pretty much on the exact same page here, that we don't want you working with inadequate PPE, and we want to find out with regard to the $400 million that we've appropriated to try to provide you with the PPE that you need, you know, what the status of that is. And I hear the point that we're in a pandemic and we are having to suffer through circumstances that nobody wants to, but the goal, the number one goal here is to keep our healthcare workforce safe so that you can take care of us when we need you. And we know a lot of people need you now, and that you're providing that care even at a time when you feel that you do not have the adequate PPE to keep yourselves and your families safe. So thank you for sharing your stories with us, and we will be following up to see what we can do on this issue. Thank you. Have a good day, everybody.